You know, it can be hard to see the challenges that people we work with every day are going through. Invisible struggles like stress and burnout, caregiving for a loved one, or being misunderstood. But insight, awareness, and empathy will help us better see the issues they're dealing with. And that can make us and our companies healthier too. I'm Holly Robinson-Pete. Join us on The Visibility Gap, a new podcast presented by Cigna Healthcare. Download it wherever you get your podcasts.
The countdown has begun. From May 14th to 16th, 1,000 global leaders will gather in Doha for the Qatar Economic Forum powered by Bloomberg. Join heads of state, influential ministers, and leading CEOs to make new connections, gain unique insights, and uncover valuable opportunities in one of the world's most rapidly rising regions. Request your invite for this exclusive event at QatarEconomicForum.com.
Welcome to Out of Office. I'm Malika Kapoor. My guest today is Jacopo Venturini, the chief executive of Italian couture house Valentino. Venturini's first day on the job was in June 2020. Clearly, the first year didn't end up being the year he imagined. But as parts of the world emerged from the pandemic, Venturini, like many of us, says he's glad to see people coming together and businesses picking up. Valentino sales have come roaring back. They're almost at pre-pandemic levels now. Clearly, those instantly recognizable metal studs on bags and shoes are still a favorite with consumers. Venturini is back at Valentino for a third time. Previously, he held merchandising positions at Prada and Gucci, where he was widely credited with leading the brand's commercial success. He has a nose for business, a sense of what's likely to trend, a passion for sustainability. Valentino is going fur-free from next year. Beneath all that, there's a young boy who loved fashion so much he would choose his outfit for school at night before he slept. A teenager who faced some troubled times because he didn't conform to a rule book. He was different. And a creative spirit who is happiest in his own company and when he's by the sea. Here's Out of Office with Jacopo Venturini, the chief executive of Valentino.
Jacopo Venturini, thank you for joining me on Out of Office.
It's a pleasure. Thank you to you for the invitation.
I saw you were in New York recently for the Met Gala. How was it?
It was interesting. And it was the first time for me, so it was very interesting.
So tell me what you found most interesting, especially since this was the first time for you.
Oh, you know, the fact to see so many people that you know but you don't know at the same time all together in the same place. And that was, I mean, after the pandemic was something really, I mean, was something that we are not used to be all together in a room enjoying time together.
Did it feel like the world was getting back to normal?
Yeah, in a way, yes. Of course, with all the respecting all the rules, it was definitely a step to going back to normal. Yeah, that's what was the feeling. What really impressed me is that you could feel the real need of all the people to go back to a normal life.
Yeah, I think everyone's ready for that now, right? It's been so long. Yeah. And I saw that many high-profile stars were wearing Valentino creations, including Whoopi Goldberg. How does the process work? What's the backstory behind these creations?
It's a double direction. There is someone coming to us, but it's Pier Paolo that with Anna Wintour select, I mean, choose the people that would like to have at the table, the host for the night.
I want to go back to your early days. What sparked your interest in fashion and in design?
But this is something that I think I'm born with, because I remember myself when I was really a child. I mean, at 6 years old, 5 years old, I was very determined on how to dress. I didn't want to anybody to interfere. So, of course, it was my mother by my clothes. But and I was preparing the thing the outfit the night before. So for me, it has always been something that we're very sensitive with. At that time, we are talking about 47, 48 years, I'm 52, so we're talking about a lot of time ago. And there was no internet, so I was obsessed with seeing the collection and see what was on the magazine. So I remember myself going to the newsstand and buying all the magazines. At that time, there was a big magazine that was twice a year. The name was Collezione, where you could see all the collection on the runway, and I was obsessed with that. It was extremely expensive, but I was buying this every 6 months because I've always been in love with fashion. And I remember also going with my mother buying clothes for herself or for myself, and it was like the most amazing part of my day. I prefer much more to go with my mother to buy clothes than play with my friends.
How did you know what to put together as a young boy?
I think it's something natural. I mean, I think it's something nobody really taught me anything. It's something very natural. And I don't even know if it was right, wrong, a good taste, bad taste. I don't know. It was for sure something not, let's say, in the rules. I've always been a bit out of the rules. And even when we are like 14, 15, and 18, it's not necessarily an easy thing. That's what I was. So,
when you say it's not really an easy thing, especially as a teenager, what do you mean? Yeah. What do you remember of those years that you say you remember it not being so easy?
I remember that I really felt like always an outsider. I really felt that someone that was not in couldn't find the right place to stay and the right people to stay with. This was something that came after when I started to work. I mean, I studied economics, but then when I was 25, I started to work at La Rinascente, which is the department store in Italy. And there I started to find people that were similar to me and that I could have a relationship. I mean, my boss, my first boss, La Rinascente, is now one of my best friends. There was five or six people of my age just graduated from the university, and I'm big friends with all of them, and one of them is my boyfriend since 23 years. So wow. It was really a very good experience, even from a professional point of view, but also from a personal perspective, because it was the first time that I felt surrounded by people I have something in common.
Who speak the same language?
Not necessarily from a superficial point of view, just the light clothes or whatever, but also from a sensitivity point of view, also from the fact that we were not necessarily in the rules. So it was something that really gave me a different perspective of myself. And I started to find myself and my identity in that moment of my life.
I have a 14-year-old son, and I know that teenage years are tricky years, right?
Yeah.
And it was especially tricky for you because, as you talk about all these sensitivities, how did you manage? Where did you get the strength from?
Well, I had a mother that was very supportive, and this was one of the best support that I had. And then I remember I had few friends, very few friends, and these were like my kind of refugee, mm-hmm. my kind of small community, you know. But I was always one to one, two or three people, not more than this. Because otherwise, when I was like in big group, I always felt that I was not in the right place.
What about your father, the rest of your family, and do you have siblings?
No. I was the only child. I'm a child of elder parents. Mm-hmm. Because my father, when I born, was like 48 years old, and my mother 37. So for that time, they were quite old. My father was a commercial directory for a licensed company in fashion, but it was not at all a fashion man. It's a normal family, but they taught me. Very important value of, you know, politeness, care of people, ethics, things that to me are very important and that were really the driver of all my life.
You talked about the tricky teenage years that you had, and they were difficult for you. I imagine it took a lot of strength and courage to get through those years. How did those years shape the person you are today? How did those years shape the person you are as a CEO?
First of all, the capability to enjoy to stay with myself, which is something I think is very important. I mean, in those years, I really lived on myself. The difficulty of being perceived as a different person, as a person that was not, let's say, in the rules. So this, I think that is something that really helped me to be a very open person that doesn't judge people, that doesn't, but it is very open to the people. Of course, it was not easy then to transform this kind of difficult moment into a strength. But of course, I mean, I also went to therapist, and I did that. I think it's something that is very interesting for a human being, because you really have the possibility to know yourself. And I think it's something that I would redo 100 times, because I think that is one of the best gifts I gave to me, because it's really the way to know about yourself and to discover yourself. And this was one of the support that I had after, because I started to do that when I was 25, 26 years old. Transform my kind of difficult background into a strength. Of course, it takes time, but it's possible.
That's amazing that you say that you would redo it over and over again. You wouldn't change those years.
I think it's the best thing, it's the best gift I've ever given to myself.
And it said it taught you to be comfortable with yourself.
Yeah.
In a recent interview, you said something interesting. You said, I work before I talk. I like to keep a low profile. Given your title, given the industry you're in, isn't it difficult to keep a low profile?
No, I think you can. I think you can. It's just a matter of, you know, being yourself, being true to yourself. You can. I mean, it's just a matter of how you are. I've always been in all my life, all the job, I've always been behind the scene, and I don't have any willingness to be at the center of the attention.
The countdown has begun. From May 14th to 16th, 1,000 global leaders will gather in Doha for the Qatar Economic Forum powered by Bloomberg. Join heads of state, influential ministers, and leading CEOs to make new connections, gain unique insights, and uncover valuable opportunities in one of the world's most rapidly rising regions. Request your invite for this exclusive event at QatarEconomicForum.com.
What is the most important value to you as a business leader? What is the one value that you think is most important?
I think that one of the most important things is respect for the people. I think that the other thing is to be able and to be willing to give back what you learn until that moment, and to be open to learn. So to be generous in a way, but at the same time to be very open to continue to learn. To be surrounded by people that are not yes men, which is something that to me is something that I could never accept. I like to be surrounded by people that challenge me all day. And I think that in order to be a good leader, you have to lead by example. So you cannot pretend that, you know, people behave in the way you want if you don't do it as the first example. But generally speaking, I think that empathy, respect, generosity in a way, but also being very open to learn by and listen by the people you are surrounded by is very important.
You are the CEO of Valentino, which means on one side you look after the design part, the fashion part, but you're also responsible for the numbers. And congratulations, I know you've had a good year despite the pandemic, and you're almost back. Your turnover is almost back to pre-pandemic levels, which is amazing. Yeah. One of the ways you've put your stamp on the company is by your focus on sustainability. And I know that's very, very important to you. You've announced that you're going fur-free from next year. How difficult is it for someone with a love for fashion to change tradition to meet sustainability goals? Like, fashion has been a tradition and a part of the fashion industry for so long. So how difficult is it to break with tradition because you want to be environmentally friendly?
Now sustainability is not, let's say, a marketing tool anymore, but should be something very serious. I cannot think about ethics without thinking about sustainability, and the opposite. I mean, to me, they go hand by hand. So for me, it's not a choice. We have to do it. Then we have to be very realistic and very honest to ourselves. It's not something that you can do as a big leap. You have to do step by step, and you have to learn how to do it. You have to be surrounded by people that knows how to do it. But you can do steps in the right direction. The decision to go for free or alpaca free, or I mean, to sign the agreement with Greenpeace years and years ago, or to change the packaging and having a bigger packaging which is 55% sustainable, or, you know, starting to do sneakers that are for a big part sustainable and recyclable. It's something that I think that we don't have another option. We have to do it. Just to give you a very simple example, we want to plant trees in the city where we are to give back oxygen to the city. I mean, we want really to give back to the planet. But generally speaking, I have this concept of giving back, which I think it's very important that it goes with ethics and sustainability.
Now, you've worked at Gucci, you've worked at Prada, and this is actually, you've worked at Valentino before, right? This is your third time at Valentino.
Yeah.
What is it about Valentino, the company, that keeps bringing you back?
after La Rinascente, I was very determined to work for Valentino. Don't ask me why, but I knew that I wanted to work for Valentino.
Well, of course, I have to ask you why.
I know why, because I think exactly what I think now. I think that is the most established Italian maison de couture, and I think it has a very strong heritage. And for me, the fact that it's the most established maison de couture, Italian maison de couture, is something that open values and strategy that other companies can do in different ways. So of course we are smaller than other maison de couture. If you think about the French one, but I think that we have the chance to play a different game, to be much more personal with our create much more personal relationship with our clients. And I think that the fact of being a maison de couture, I mean, couture make you think about the relationship that there is between the client and the premier, make you think about the obsession for detail, make you think about the fact that companies may call you and announce the importance of the person.
Who do you think has had the biggest influence on your life, either in your personal life or in your professional life?
There is not one single person. I was very lucky in my life, I think, because I've already told you about the story of La Rinascente, so I'm not going to repeat it, but this was a kind of influence. Then, I mean, at the end of the day, I have a personality, for sure, but even strong, but the fact to have had the possibility to meet so many different people and to have the possibility to have even a personal relationship and a professional relationship really make me more rich, make me more complete as a person, and really make me also discover part of myself that was still hidden, even if I did 20 years of analysis. There are still parts of yourself that are hidden and that you can discover, which yes. I think is one of the best things of the life.
Absolutely, absolutely. And in your personal life, is there anybody who stands out as having had the biggest impact on you?
Well, my mother was one of the person that really taught me, as I told you at the beginning, the importance of the respect for people, which is something that I always have in my heart on a daily basis. And then, you know, I'm staying, I'm having the same boyfriend since 23 years. We are completely different person. We are like the moon and the sun.
Really?
But, yeah. But
does he work in fashion too?
Yeah. But I think that the fact to be so different, of course, we have point of contact because otherwise it would be very difficult. But the kind of, you know, growing together and I don't know if you say complement together.
Yeah,
complement together. So it's something very, very interesting. And then I have very few friends, but that for me are my family.
And the last question is, this podcast is called Out of Office. What's your favorite thing to do when you're not in the office?
Definitely going as much as possible closer to the sea and look at the sea and listening to the noise of the sea.
Beautiful. There is nothing as relaxing as that, isn't it?
Yeah.
Great, Mr. Venturini.
It's really the best way to recover it.
Absolutely. Do you have a favorite seaside spot you go to?
I have a house in Liguria, which is near Milan, where I go when I can by the sea. just living close to the sea. Yeah, it's my escape place.
Fantastic. Thank you very much for your time. I've really enjoyed this conversation.
Me too.
And thank you for opening up and being so honest. I really appreciate it.
It's a pleasure. It's a pleasure to share all this.
That was Jacopo Venturini, the CEO of Valentino. I enjoyed hearing about his teenage years and how those years of not fitting in made him develop a stronger sense of self and drove home the importance of tolerance and acceptance. I hope you enjoyed listening to this chat as well. Remember, Out of Office is on the Bloomberg Terminal, on Bloomberg.com, Apple Podcasts, and Spotify. We're also on Twitter. The handle is @podcasts. This episode was produced by Laura Carlson. I'm Malika Kapoor. Wherever you are in the world, I hope you stay well. And as always, thank you for listening.
The countdown has begun. From May 14th to 16th, 1,000 global leaders will gather in Doha for the Qatar Economic Forum powered by Bloomberg. Join heads of state, influential ministers, and leading CEOs to make new connections, gain unique insights, and uncover valuable opportunities in one of the world's most rapidly rising regions. Request your invite for this exclusive event at QatarEconomicForum.com.